Hi, I'm Patrick Parker, and you're listening to the Becoming Who You Truly Are podcast, a show that helps us all live more authentic lives. This week, I'm joined by my gym buddy, Casey Anderson, who spent many mornings teaching me how to lift weights while we talked about life. In this episode, Casey gets real about how losing his mom at an early age helped him understand personal responsibility, how a brain injury helped him appreciate life more, and how having kids taught him the true meaning of priorities and sacrifice. I'm sure that by the end of this episode, we're all going to be inspired by Casey's story, which will prove that honesty with yourself, self-knowledge, and not avoiding hard things can help you grow into an authentic and fantastic life.
Thank you for the introduction. It's was nice.
We met at a gym that's nearby my home, and I saw that Casey was like super into weight training, and I had never done a deadlift, never done a squat. Yeah, my first impression of you was basically just very superficial, as in, he knows how to do something that I don't know how to do, and I'm going to be his friend, so he'll teach me.
I think that was pretty much what happened, yeah. We met at the gym and started to talk, and we had a lot of really cool talks, I think. Talk about like everything from religion to weight training and life generally, yeah.
So Casey, I know from our talks in the gym that we both grew up kind of in more of a rural area, and we both grew up with animals. So why don't you just paint a picture for people listening who aren't from Norway, for example, like what is life like for a little boy growing up in rural Norway on the farm? What was your childhood like?
Wasn't much neighbors, and you have to figure out how to entertain yourself, and you had to use your fantasy. You have to play with animals, play with your siblings and your family, and but you still had to work to chop wood and take care of the animals, harvest eggs, work and clean up, and to do something to make the next day good. Some responsibility, I would say.
So when you said you had to prepare to make the next day good, what did you mean by that? Like with the animals or with the house?
Yeah,
or
with the animals, and like on a farm, it's a full-time job. Yeah, always have to prepare something for the next day or the next season, or you always have to do some work sacrifices to make the future better, or at least stable and predictable.
And you mentioned that you spent a lot of time out in nature, outdoors, when you were a kid. Explain what that's like, because for people who aren't from Norway, they don't spend time out in nature like kids in Norway do. So paint a picture, like give us some details.
It's a lot of raw nature, untouched nature in Norway. So you're able to make cabins in the trees and without anybody interrupting you. So you're pretty much alone. That's pretty nice, and you can make your own kind of country in the woods. That's nice, and to go around and make fire camp and or campfire and chop down trees, play cowboy. I think it was pretty nice to grow up like that.
So you were going up through your childhood into your teen years, and then something happens. What was it?
I'd say one of the first big turning points was when my mom died in 2009. And she was my cliff in my life. So it was really, really hard for me. And so she disappeared, and then I had to I was pretty much by myself, so it made me made me grow, and I understood that no one is coming to help you, and you're in this alone. And suddenly the ground under you was taken away from you, and you had to figure out how to stabilize yourself and figure out things by yourself. So, and that I suddenly understood that I had this agency of my life.
Okay, Casey, so 2009, your mom passes away. So how old were you then?
I was 20, 19. There was a brain stroke, so and the brain stroke made her made a big bleeding in her brain, and then she died from it in 2009. But she had a brain stroke earlier, like 9 years earlier. So she was living with that brain stroke, but she was not really much affected by it. But 9 years later, she this brain stroke escalated, and then she died from it in 2009, and it happened like overnight. So I wasn't expecting her to pass away. So
very shocking.
Yeah, it was.
I had a very close friend of mine in 2020. She was kind of like a mother figure to me in some way. She was much older than me, and she passed away suddenly. I had no idea that she had cancer, but she didn't tell anyone, and it was very sudden, and it totally rocked my world. But I wasn't 20, and she wasn't my mom, so I can only imagine that I experienced maybe just a, I don't know, 10% of what you did, maybe, if even that much.
Yeah, it was really hard for me to figure out my life alone. I learned a lot from it, so and I learned to have more gratitude for every day and my relations, and also know that how suddenly you can pass away, and have to take responsibility of your life and make the best out of it, and yeah, squeeze what you can out of it.
So those are all very valuable life lessons, but I guess there was a time period between when she passed and getting to the life lesson that was very like painful. Can you take us through a little bit of like what that was like for you? For example, like, you know, when my friend passed away, I had to learn how to cry, and it was a very difficult process for me to learn how to like be sad and not turn it into anger. That for example, that was my thing that I had to learn. So what was it like for you, the whole process of coming to terms with her dying? What did that like entail for you?
I would say that when I lost my mother, I felt that she was abandoning me, actually. I felt that she disappeared and I was left alone and no one is taking care of me, and I had to get over it. That was my first, it's kind of weird thing, but I felt that I was abandoned, and I had to learn how to get over it. And pain never goes away, and you just learn how to adapt to it. For me, it has been a motivation to make her proud, even if I'm not religious, but I'm want to make her history, tell her history, and make her proud of what I can accomplish in this life. So if she's standing something somewhere up there and looking at me, I want her to be proud.
I know you just said that you're not religious, and so I don't want to step on your toes or anything, but there is a Bible verse that I really, really like that talks about how there's a great cloud of witnesses watching over us and cheering us on. I'm paraphrasing it. And I really like to think that my friend is up there watching me live my life, and maybe your mom is also up there watching you live your life. And it's a nice, it's a very comforting sentiment.
Yeah, but it's like, it's also that if I can make my life great, and then I'm passing on her story and her values. And so for me, it's like I'm making her live further by passing on her values and her story.
And if I can just go one layer deeper, I'm just curious, because there are so many buzzwords these days in society, like, we need to have boundaries, or blah, blah, this, blah, 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 that. And so when you said abandonment, it made me think, you know, that's sort of like one of those buzzwords, as in like people hear the word and they know it means something inside yourself, but the average person, I think, doesn't really go much further than that. Oh, abandonment issue. Oh, okay. That's a concept I've heard of. But like, can you take us through, like, what were the actual body sensations that you felt? Like, what were the consequences of feeling that way? As in, like, did you kind of negatively react to that pain of feeling abandoned? And how did you gain skills to move past that feeling of abandonment?
It's like your herd is leaving you. It's like you're just pushed out. It wasn't rational, but it's because she died and she couldn't do anything about it. But it was a way for my brain, I think, to rationalize what happened and explain to myself. And the way I worked through it, I think it was just to be honest with myself about what happened. And try to feel. Now, don't push the feelings away, and just sit in the pain, and just let the pain come and go, and the thoughts, and I don't know if that answered your question, but
yeah, that answered the question. I think I was hearing you say something on the lines of, like, it wasn't rational, but it was your brain's way of rationalizing it. So what I took from that was like, okay, probably on the outside, maybe your actions toward others wouldn't look rational. Just sort of like ping-ponging around for a couple of years.
Yeah, it's true. And it's like that you have to forgive her for like, and forgive the world for abandoning me. It's like, it was really weird. Mm. Thoughts, but I was trying to forgive what happened to me and just to move on.
I didn't feel abandoned. I'm just referring back to my friend, because that's the only really close person I've ever lost in my life. I've lost a few family members, but no one as emotionally close as she was. And I don't know if I felt abandoned by her, but I felt very angry by her. And I felt like she owed me something. Like, I felt like she was supposed to have left me something behind after she passed away, like some sort of like scavenger hunt.
Hmm.
And the end of the scavenger hunt would be the secret of life. I don't know. I think when we lose somebody that we really love, I think our brain just goes haywire for a little while.
Yeah.
Speaking of brains, should we go to the second big turning point in your life?
Yeah, sure.
So I know you told me the second big thing in your life was a brain injury. When you were how old?
It was in 2010, 1 year after my mom died.
Tell us what happened, and then we'll do a deep dive into how it changed you.
Some fighting in a town nearby where I live, in Fredrikstad. And I was... It was some guys who were jealous on me because I had some girls who was dancing with me. And so they were pissed at me. And then we had a little wrestling match in there. And the guards separated us because they saw that these guys were attacking me. And then they told me to just go and to leave the place because they were like arresting these guys, and the police were coming to pick them up, but there were a lot of guys and I was the only man, so they know that I would escalate if I stayed there, so they told me to go. And then I left, and suddenly the police didn't arrive, so they have to let them go, and then they got after me, and then they hit me in the head. So I fall down, and I hit my head in the ground. Then I had a brain stroke, like my mom, actually, from a trauma. So I had a little brain stroke in my back head, and then this escalated. They were the ambulance, the helicopter was picking me up and sent me to a bigger hospital, and they did a surgery to evacuate the bleeding, and so I was in a coma, and they told me that, or that my nearest persons or my family, that if he will survive, he will probably not be able to walk again because of this surgery or this trauma. But then I waked up, and I was in better shape than expected, but I had to learn how to walk again, and I was in a wheelchair. And I was in a rehabilitation, and it took a couple of years before I was totally back. But I don't have any issues today anymore, but it was a pretty hard time, yeah.
When you were in the coma, did you see the white light and all of that that people report when they're in the coma?
I was so sad waking up and I didn't see myself. But actually, it was pretty weird, because when I was put in to coma, I was still, I can remember, but I was unconscious, but I can remember I was put in the helicopter. But I was supposed to be unconscious, but I can remember it, and I can remember they telling me that, or speaking with each other, and I remember the last word was the AM key. That's what they call the ambulance, and key is here in 15 minutes.
So was that like an out-of-body experience where you could see your body?
I don't know, really, but I just remember, I couldn't see myself. But I was able to hear and understand what happened. But after that, I couldn't remember anything more. I was telling myself that this is going to be okay. Don't worry. This is going to be okay. You're just going to have a surgery now, and you're going to wake up tomorrow. And everything, or just some days after, and then you're going to be okay. So everything will be just fine. Just have to have faith.
And how long did it take you to, how long were you in the wheelchair, for example?
It took some years before I got, before I was totally fine. But I was in the wheelchair for like a couple of months before I was able to stand up and do things on my own. So I had to learn how to have someone to help me with almost everything.
They told your loved ones that that you probably wouldn't be able to walk again. So do you think it was luck that you're able to walk now and you're back to your total, fully functioning self? Or did you like iron will it? And like through sheer determination, make it happen? Or what do you think happened?
I think it was a combination between luck and willpower. And that I was in reasonably good shape as well. And I was really young. So I was way more fitted to have something like that.
And by reasonably good shape, for people listening, by reasonably good shape, he means that he was a wrestler and a gymnast and probably fitter than like 99.9% of people in the world. So, Casey, let's for a moment pretend like the bar fight never happened. You never had the stroke. You were never in the coma. And none of that ever happened. Who do you think you would be now if that life event had not occurred for you?
Yeah, I think I wouldn't get as far as I got. And I don't think I would appreciate my life as much as I do now. And I wouldn't take the full responsibility of my life. I would just float around, I think. So I was more floating around before this injury. And I didn't appreciate the small things in life, like something weird. But you know, when you're hospitalized and you're laying in this bed in the hospital, and you're not able to pee by yourself, so you have to drag in this alarm and tell the nurse to come and help you when you get pee. And it's really, really embarrassing. And they're arriving with like a pipe. And you have to pee in this pipe. And it's really embarrassing. And it's like small things like that. And just be able to take care of myself, take a shower by myself. All these small things you take for granted, you suddenly learn how to appreciate it. And you also learn how to cultivate your health, because you want to keep this kind of health longer, and you want to grow old and be able to do this for as long as possible.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever been grateful to be able to pee by myself or to be able to walk, but I could see why you would find joy in just getting up and walking sometimes after being in a wheelchair all the time. And you talked about cultivating your health. So you're like one of the most in shape, physically healthy people I know. So what tips do you have for me and other people listening for, like, I know that you do things that I can't do and others can't do, but what are like just some basic health tips that you've used to cultivate that physical health for yourself that we can all do?
I think it's about thinking in long term. I think that you can just getting in extremely good shape in just months. You have to continuously work on what you want to do and have some goals, even if it's like you want to run like 10 kilometers in a certain time, or you want to be able to play with your kids, or what you want to do, and you have to have some goals and work towards that and learn how to like educate yourself and learn how to eat and learn how to exercise to reach these goals. And it's like you have to always have to sacrifice something every day. It's like everything else, I would say. It's like you have to have an extension of yourself in future. You know, you can't just think about you just now, but in the future, like half a year, 1 year, 10 years, but even if the certainty get lower and lower, how long out you go, but it's like you have to have a narrative, like the history in the future of how things are going to be. And you have to sacrifice something today to have something in the future. And this future may you, or this belief in the future, make you sacrifice something today. So I think that can adapt to everything in life. So the most successful people do that, this in every situation, I think.
A friend of mine named Amara Mattingly, who did an interview with on the channel a long, long time ago, she said that us human beings aren't so great at seeing the long arc of life, like of thinking into the future and seeing how what we do today will have impact when we're 80 or after we're dead. And so what you were saying made me think of that. And yeah, for example, all four of my grandparents were diabetic, and I love sweets, you know? And so like, I don't mind exercising. I don't mind getting enough sleep. I don't mind meditating. I don't mind doing most of the things that people advocate for with health. But man, when you were talking, I was like, okay, maybe I need to put down the sweets if I'm thinking about the long arc of my life and having a good life when I'm 80.
It's like, for me, it's like I'm trying to not be that greedy about these dopamine levels. I have to have this rise in dopamine levels immediately. I want to have this long-term high dopamine levels.
You're saying that, like, when I eat my cake, I'm having the dopamine boost? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, or for me at least, it's like when I do something unhealthy, often it's because I want to have this rise dopamine levels immediately.
Okay, so next time I eat a piece of cake, I'll have Casey's voice in my head saying, don't be greedy. Don't be greedy.
And we have to have some flaws as well. So, yeah.
You ruined my cake. And Norwegians are a little weird with their sweet intake, I think. For example, like, weird in how good y'all are with it. Like, I learned that only on Saturdays do kids eat sweets here. And then on the 17th of May, the Independence Day, the kids get the binge on ice cream, but the rest of the year, it's very moderate.
Yeah.
But speaking of kids and speaking of sacrifice, you were mentioning sacrifice goes with health. Shall we go to the third turning point and the event in your life that taught you about sacrifice and priority?
Yes, when I would say when I got kids, I suddenly learned to be something, part of something bigger than myself. That was a big change for me, because I was, my role as a dad wasn't just in my head, but in my relations. So it was a kind of bigger thing, life changer for me, and somehow to be responsible for someone else. And then I have to also learn how to learn them to think about the future, not just today. It's a big part of the parenting, to learn them to think about the future, and but still enjoy the moments. And so that was a big life changer for me. And to have this herd, and cultivate this herd. Then you also had to have this sacrifice, because you can't just do whatever you want anymore, and then you have to prioritize. And you have to cut out those people who don't give you much, or just energy drainers, because you can't use time on them anymore. It's just if you're giving them your energy, then you're taking away the energy you're supposed to give to your kids. So you have to be really hard to in prioritizing, and you also have to sacrifice a lot of things to be able to take care of your kids. Like, you can't go around partying more and
So you were just talking about how you want to teach your kids about enjoying the day, but also preparing for the future. So you mentioned this idea of looking at the long arc of the future and the form, health, and now with your kids. So that's like this theme that's going through this conversation. And I also heard you talking about how once your kids came around, you weren't floating. You said that you were floating before this bar fight happened, and that something of that whole situation gave you more focus and like appreciation for life. And then it sounds like the kids gave you even more focus about like who you wanted to be around and what you wanted to be doing and what you didn't want to do anymore. So it's very interesting. Those two things keep propping up over our talk today.
Yeah, I had to learn how to be a captain on these boats. Don't just float around and make everyone else your captain of your boat. And that is what the kids expect from you as well. To be safe, you have to be a sturdy leader. You have to make them feel real. You have to make them feel safe. And that is two things I think it's the most important things to focus on as a parent, to make them feel real in their own emotions and what their impressions and their own emotions and things happening around them, that this is real what you feel, and you're safe with me.
So I guess you're like the captain of the ship called family, but at the same time, you're not overly steering their world, as in you were saying they get to have their own emotions and their own experiences. Yeah. And I think that's great, because I see a lot of parents are, well, okay, I probably shouldn't be judging since I don't have kids myself yet, but I think I've just seen from my own viewpoint that maybe sometimes parents get a little bit too authoritative in telling kids what they're feeling or not feeling, which I think that's, we all have our own perspective. They see things differently than their parents do, I think.
Yeah, and of course, it's really hard to be a parent, because it's hard to always validate their feelings and always have time for their feelings and always meet their needs and feelings. And sometimes you just can't meet their feelings and their needs. I try to think about it like, if I do it mostly of the time, I'm a reasonably good parent, but I can't meet them on everything because the world is not like that.
So what do you do when you can't meet their needs? Do you just say, okay, daddy's having to freak out?
Like, sometimes they just understand that now dad can't meet my needs. He get enough with himself right now. He's okay. Stressed out, or and when I'm like up there, I'm yelling or something like that, like something I shouldn't do, but it happens.
And so I guess your kids are now what? They're almost teenagers, right?
Yeah, almost. This summer, the old boy is going to be 13.
So, okay. Can you share with us like your one favorite moment from your son's life and your one favorite moment from your daughter's life?
Got so many special moments. And that was so beautiful to have through having kids, because you're able to see the world over again when you got a kid, because you're suddenly able to see the world through their eyes and walk around with them, and suddenly you watch a leaf or something, small things that just, oh, this is actually pretty cool. I never thought about it since I was like their age. But that's one of the things. I think it's many small things. I don't have, of course, there are some big things as well, but there are many small things who will make this parenting special and beautiful. So, and I like to think of the life as well. Like every, it's not the, these big things we're gonna make your life good. It's all of these small things every day we're gonna make your life good. So yeah, and it's the same thing with this turning points as well, because I think it's all of these turning points are really hard and uncomfortable and make your consciousness higher, but it's what you do afterwards, it's how you adapt to it. The small things in life will make you stronger and how you adapt to it. Yeah. So I think it's a lot of small things. It's like success is not one main decision. It's a lot of small decisions and small things you do.
No, I agree with that. But okay, I have actually a story from parenting, even though I'm not a parent. When I was working at the Barnehage to learn Norwegian, there was a little kid there. He was my favorite. And he was a very special little boy. I could tell that he was privy to very special secrets about the universe that he couldn't express to others, or maybe even himself, but he had a very strong life energy, okay? And one day I said, what's your favorite part about the Barnehage? And he came and sat in my lap, and he said, you. And he gave me a kiss on the cheek. So that's my favorite part, story from parenting so far, even though I'm not a parent.
That's cool.
So I can imagine if you have babies and you get to have stuff like that all the time, it's just very rich. So that more or less wraps up our serious portion of the episode with Casey's life story and sharing with us how losing his mom and having a brain injury and having kids has taught him about sacrifice and priorities and yada, yada, yada. And now let's get to the good part. Let's do rapid fire. So Casey's going to ask me questions, and I'm going to ask him questions, and they're going to be short answers, 30 seconds or less. And I have no idea what you have prepared for me, Casey, and I barely have any idea of what I have prepared to ask you. So do you want to go first, or shall I go first?
I can go first this time. Yeah. Yes, you could create one law that everyone had to follow. What would it be?
No talking about politics.
No.
Yeah, that would be it.
No talking about politics. Yeah. That's a nice one.
Yeah. Yeah. Only someone may. You can do it around yourselves. Yeah. That's fine. But get it out of my life. Okay. This one is not as fun as the one you just asked me, but what is the kindest thing someone's ever done for you?
It's like I've said previously, it's like these small things, just to give me a hug when they know I need a hug. Just come to me and just give me a hug. It's like these small things, yeah, really. Like when my kids started and have done it, yeah. And just call me and ask, how are you? Are things going? Or yeah, when you're having a hard time, yeah.
Good answer.
So now it's me. What is the best advice you've got?
Okay, so three people are coming to mind, and this is just, okay, the top of my head, okay? So I'm thinking of my high school piano teacher at my high school graduation. She gave me a card that says, Patrick, always remember that people are more important than music, and it's taking me an entire lifetime to understand what she meant by that, which is that, you know, relationships are more valuable than results. I can be the best in the world at something, which I don't think really exists anyway. But if I'm an asshole, then it who cares, you know? So that was really valuable advice. A good friend of mine in Paris, he tells me over and over, life is an adventure. Like we email, because he's a little too old school for the, he's too old school for the phone. And yeah, we email. It's like pen pals, I guess. He tells me that. Yes, I remember that life is an adventure, and with each day is a new page. And then also I had a teacher in my university one time in undergrad, and I was like, what in the world am I going to do with my life once I leave here? Like, you know, I don't feel like I have any marketable skills, even though I have this degree. And she said, Patrick, you'll make it the best way you can. And I've really held on to that my whole life. Like anytime I'm not sure how I'm going to pay the bills or just make my life make sense, I just remember her saying, Patrick, you'll make it the best way you can.
It's a good one.
Okay, Casey, what is humanity's most positive quality?
That we are able to project our life and to think about our future.
What's your next question for me?
So what is the baddest advice or the worst advice you have got?
Probably when I was 21 years old and I had friends who said, Patrick, let's go over yonder to that bar and have a beer.
Okay, what happened?
Well, wouldn't you like to know?
Okay, that's it.
Okay, if you could travel to any time, past, present, or future, which would you pick and why?
Maybe during the 70s. See how it was.
Would you draw a passage with Hendrix, or what would you do in the 70s?
With Hendrix. So, Patrick, what did you used to appreciate that you don't appreciate anymore?
That's a difficult one. I guess the things that I've given up over the course of my 20s and 30s, like, you know, I don't drink anymore. I'm vegetarian now. I don't smoke anymore. I don't drink soft drinks. And while I did those things, I appreciated them very much.
Yeah.
What is your best trait and what is your worst trait?
I think that I'm really empathic. I see myself as empathic, at least. So, my worst would be that I find it hard to wait for things. I want it now. I want to do it now.
I can relate to that last one. Yeah, I can be quite impatient. No, I think you're definitely empathic. I mean, just the fact that you're talking about being aware that your kids have their own emotions and their own thoughts and feelings about life, that's very empathic. Oh, no, it's your turn for me now.
What keeps you awake at night?
For me, the thing that keeps me awake at night is the excitement of all the ideas I have and thinking about how to carry them out. And so I've had to learn to train myself to kind of put away my creative energy, just like a kid would put away a textbook when it's time to quit studying and go to bed before the exam, or, you know, somebody partying, like, you know, the bar has last call for a reason, you know, like it's time to be finished. So I sort of have a last call on my creative thoughts for the night, and then I have to sort of consciously shut my brain down. But that's what keeps me up at night. It's a very positive, good thing. So, Casey, let's end the episode with this Becoming Who You Truly Are section that I've ended every episode with in this first season. So what do you think it means for a person to become who they truly are?
It means to be honest with yourself and work yourself towards the truth, and that means to be able to take some risk and be brave. And you can't be brave if there's no risk. So I think it's, you have to sacrifice your safety and your comfortability sometimes you have to sacrifice relations, you have to sacrifice your identity and to able to go towards your true self. For me, at least, that's the truth.
And sacrifice caring what other people think about you, I think also.
Yeah, definitely. It's like what other people think about you. It's not your business. So had to let it go.
Like when I was 17 and sort of making my own way out into the world and saying, okay, this is who I am, etc. I had to hear a lot of resistance, and I had to say, okay, I'm not going to listen to them, even though they're super important family members. I'm going to do it my way. Damn it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was what I had to sacrifice. But that's interesting that you truly are requires sacrifice. I like it. And what are the things, Casey, that build you up and make you feel like most alive and most like in touch with your most authentic self?
It's experiencing the world with my relations, I think, and experiencing small and big adventures together with my herd. That's what makes me happy.
And at this point in your life, do you feel like settled in and like you're who you're supposed to be? Or do you feel like there's more work to do? And if so, what is that work?
Definitely more work to do. More stuff to reach for. And yeah, more wisdom to reach for. And yeah, how to work to get closer to the truth. Even if I'm never going to get there, I want to work to get. Yeah.
We can get closer. Is there anything in particular you're doing right now?
Trying to take my time to get in contact with my own compass. Not just stress around and make bad decisions. Just try to take my time and try to avoid all of this information around in the world that are pushed on you, and try to avoid a lot of this information stream and get in contact with myself and take some free time off.
I like that. And okay, final question. Do you have any resources that you can share with the people listening? For example, are there any books you've read, podcasts you listen to, or just any general life skills that you can share with all of us as we go on that same journey to getting closer to the truth?
You have to find your own way, I think, what fits you and what, because there's no mold who fits everyone. So we have to find your own path and fill your own gaps, I think, and you have to be able to be through to yourself, and sometimes it's hard to be honest with yourself and tell yourself, this is my gap, this is where I'm missing something. So I try to fill these gaps and search and search and search until you find your find the wisdom you need to make your life complete.
That's a great answer, but I was sure that you were going to say, Patrick, I recommend the Alex Huberman podcast, because you told me about that podcast so many times.
Yeah, I do. I would definitely recommend that one as well.
If you have, 4 hours to spare to listen to one episode, then go listen to Alex Huberman. He likes it all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Casey, I've so appreciated you taking time out of your day to do this episode with me. And are there any final thoughts you'd like to leave with us?
Yeah.
Make it good.
I don't know, but I think that's a good one, is to, in your life, you have to choose. You must choose your own regrets. Even regrets of not having the discipline. Or you have to, but you're going to have regrets anyway. So you have to choose it wisely.
I like that. Well, thank you so much, Casey. Really a pleasure.
Thanks for having me here. It was really nice.
That's it for this week's podcast. If you'd like to support the channel, you can go to patreon.com/PatrickAAParker. While supplies last, I'll send you a free Audible version of my book, Becoming Who You Truly Are, with your subscription. Thanks for watching and listening. And until the next episode, I wish you nothing but the best on your life's journey to becoming all that you truly are.